First Samuel chapter 18, and we read from verse 1 down as far as verse 11. First Samuel 18, verse 1. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him, and did not let him return to his father's house. And Jonathan made a covenant with David, because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing, and gave it to David, along with his tunic, and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. Whatever Saul sent him to do, David did it so successfully that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the people, and Saul's officers as well. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul, with singing and dancing, with joyful songs, and with tambourines and lutes. As they danced, they sang, "Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands." Saul was very angry. This refrain galled him. "They have credited David with tens of thousands," he thought, "but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom?" And from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David. Next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully upon Saul. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the harp as he usually did. Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, "I'll pin David to the wall." But David eluded him twice. And we end the reading there at verse 11. David encounters both love and jealousy. Don't know how familiar you are with Shakespearean plays, the plays of William Shakespeare. You're probably familiar with one or two of them because you had to study them at school. As you'll know, that many of his plays are tragedies. They feature at the heart of the play a tragic figure, someone who is destroyed and pulled down, usually by some weakness in his own character. One of the most famous plays of William Shakespeare is called Othello. And Othello is certainly a tragic figure, and he comes to a tragic end. And at the heart of that play, the fatal weakness, if you like, in Othello's character is jealousy. He has a supposed advisor and friend called Iago, who actually manipulates him, and manipulates him to such a degree that Othello becomes filled with jealousy, even in relation to his wife, and he ends up killing her. This play is a powerful demonstration and expression of what jealousy can do to a human being. The lengths it can take him to, the depths it can draw him into. And there are many other examples of that in human history. And here in the passage before us, David is going to encounter human jealousy at its very worst. Before that, however, he encounters something else which is much more favourable. He encounters the love of Jonathan, Saul's son. And that's the first thing we want to look at this morning. And this is going to be very important even against the background of Saul's jealousy. The love of Jonathan is going to be very, very important in protecting David from Saul's jealousy. Look at verses 1 to 4. And we'll see the friendship that is here spoken of arising between Jonathan and David. A couple of things about it. First of all, notice the closeness of the fellowship, of the friendship. Notice its closeness. The New International Version translates the phrase in verse 1 as being one in spirit. Jonathan became one in spirit with David. One in spirit. And the older translation maybe captures it even better and more literally, where it says, "The soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David." The soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. In other words, between them there was established the closest of human ties, the closest of human bonds. They were really, really close to one another. One in spirit, the soul of one knit to the soul of the other. You'll agree, that's a description, isn't it, of a very close friendship. There's another expression that's equally powerful used, and it's used not once, it's used twice. It's used in verse 1, if you'll notice. Verse 1. It says, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. And then, just down in verse 3, and Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Now, of course, the commandment and the word of God tells us to love our neighbours as ourselves. But that's a very hard thing to do. It's quite a remarkable thing here that it can be said of Jonathan. He loved David as if he were himself, as much as himself. And not once, but twice that is stated. So you see here, don't you, the closeness of the friendship between these two men. And it was marked by, as you'll see here, a covenant of friendship. In verses 3 and 4, a covenant of friendship. It's specifically stated, in fact, that Jonathan made a covenant with David. In other words, it wasn't just an informal friendship, important as that was, but there was some kind of solemn commitment that Jonathan entered into. And Jonathan is here taking the initiative. He made a covenant with David. He committed himself to David to be his loyal and steadfast friend. That he would stand by him and stand with him and be with him. And this covenant, and covenants were often marked by some kind of outward mark or seal, if you like, this covenant really is sealed in verse 4 because Jonathan gives some gifts to David. Those things which belong to himself. He takes off his robe. He gives it to David along with his tunic and even, it says, his sword, his bow and his belt. So it's not just even an informal kind of friendship. It's a binding commitment here. A covenant of friendship. And as you may know, point C here, later on, when Jonathan dies, David thinks back about the closeness of their friendship. He reflects upon it. He mourns over Jonathan. And he says something that really is quite striking, quite remarkable, in 2 Samuel 1 and verse 26. Here's what he says. I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother. You were very dear to me. Your love for me was wonderful, more wonderful than that of woman. Quite a remarkable statement that is, isn't it? Of how much David appreciated the love and friendship that Jonathan had given to him. Very dear to me. Even he was willing to say that Jonathan's friendship was more wonderful than that of woman. And of course, there are no sexual connotations to this love. Nowadays, we live in such a world, such a perverted world, a world that is so twisted that a close friendship between two men could be thought of as in some way suspicious. But this is a healthy bond between two men. Loyal friendship. Commitment to one another. That's a good thing. That's a healthy thing. We see other examples of it, I think, in the scriptures. Don't you sense it in Paul and Timothy? Paul was, if you like, a spiritual father in the faith. But he speaks of Timothy in the fondest of terms. He appreciates him as a co-worker. And you can sense in the way that Paul writes about him, he appreciates him so much as a friend who stood with him in the work of the gospel. So the first thing we see here is the love and friendship of Jonathan for David. And a surprising thing when you might think about it. For who was Jonathan? Jonathan was the son of King Saul. If David were going to become the next king, if there's any inkling of that, any thought of that, and Jonathan does become aware of that quite soon, if there was any inkling or possibility of that, surely you would think Jonathan might be jealous. Protective of his own interests, he would probably be the heir. Far from being threatened, feeling threatened by David, he proves to be a loyal and steadfast friend. And you see, here you find the providence of God at work, don't you? You find the providence of God at work in this circumstance, in this friendship, because as we'll read through, as we go through the following chapters, God uses Jonathan to shield David from Saul's fury and Saul's murderous intentions. Here's a means appointed by God that's going to protect his servant David from the ill designs of Saul. It's meant also, of course, to stand as a stark contrast to the behavior of Saul, because as we'll see very, very shortly, there's a stark contrast here in this chapter, on the one hand, between on the one hand, the love of Jonathan, and on the other hand, the jealousy of Saul. I think perhaps if there is a lesson for us here, doesn't it just remind us men here, particularly today, of the value that we should place upon male friendship? Woman's friendship, of course, is very important as well, not excluding women from friendship with fellow women. But perhaps male friendship is not as often as prized and valued now as it should be. Especially valuable to those men who are single, not yet married and in no immediate family of their own, but it should be something of value to us all. Just think about it for a moment. Have you cause to be thankful today, men? For some man or men in whom God has placed in your life who stood by you, been a source of strength and encouragement and advice and counsel. They've been loyal to you and you've been loyal to them. Isn't that a blessing? Isn't that a good thing in a world where there are so many challenges and so many pressures to have someone, a friend, to stand by you? A friend who will be closer even than a brother? Maybe it reminds us too here, the men of this congregation, we should endeavour to get closer to one another. We don't really have a very functioning men's fellowship at the moment. Here, it's something that's been thought about. It's something we should seek to develop. But surely in the congregation, we as men should be good, loyal friends to one another. Some will be closer than others. We should all in the congregation as men be good friends to one another in the Lord. The love of Jonathan, the value of having a good and faithful friend. Let us be good and faithful friends to those whom the Lord has brought close to us. But that's not the main feature of this chapter. Indeed, it stands in contrast to verses 5 to 11. Secondly, we'll see the jealousy of Saul. The jealousy of Saul. Now, in the actual Hebrew, verse 9, we're looking at the description of this jealousy first of all. In the actual Hebrew, if you look at verse 9 for a moment, in the Hebrew, the word jealous is not actually found. It really says that Saul eyed David. He eyed him. From that time on, he eyed David. So there's no, the Hebrew word jealousy is not found, but most commentators agree that what's at work here is jealousy. He eyes David with a jealous eye. What is jealousy? It's closely related to envy, of course, and we tend to use them interchangeably. Somebody has defined it in this way, a dictionary has defined them in this way. Envy is the emotion felt when you want a possession which someone else has, while jealousy is the emotion related to fear that something you have will be taken away by someone else. Jealousy is the emotion related to the fear that something you have will be taken away by someone else. Or it has also been defined as the resentment toward a person one thinks of as a rival. The resentment toward a person one thinks of as a rival. That certainly fits the context here, doesn't it? Because Saul comes to eye David as a rival. He feels very threatened by him. He has a jealous eye upon him. What's the cause of his jealousy? What's the cause of Saul's jealousy? Look at verses 6 to 8. It's the song, isn't it? The chorus that the women are singing after the victory of the Philistines. This is quite a common thing for women to greet the victorious soldiers and sing their praises as they return from the battlefield. And here there's a particular chorus in the song that really upsets Saul. It really gets to him. It really annoys him. What is the chorus? Verse 7. Well, as the woman danced, here's what they sang. Here's what they sang. Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands. Now, commentators would point out that this actually is just a poetic way of praising both of them. That those who were singing this song, who were singing this refrain, did not actually intend any bad reflection upon Saul. That they were praising both of them equally, in fact. It was just a poetic form of doing it. But you can see how Saul could take it the wrong way, couldn't you? And he did take it the wrong way. He focused upon that refrain, "Oh, I've only slain my thousands." But they're telling me that David, this David, he's slain his tens of thousands. They're praising him far more than they're praising me. And I'm the king. See his reaction, verse 8. He was not just angry. He was very angry. And here's what he thought. They have credited David with tens of thousands, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? Resentment toward one he perceives now as his rival. One who has been praised more than he has been praised, so he thinks. And this is the cause of Saul's jealousy. Note then the effect or the effects of his jealousy. Well, first of all, in verse 8, he was not just angry. When he heard this refrain, when he heard this song being sung over again, he was angry, very angry. Verse 8, he was very angry. It says this refrain galled him. It really annoyed him. And this allowed, of course, the door to be opened to the influence of the evil spirit, which drove Saul on to even deeper anger, even murderous anger. Do you see how it comes here to an impulsive anger, an impulsive desire to kill David? Not once, but twice, while David is even playing the soothing music, the seething jealousy of Saul takes a hold of him, and he throws the javelin or the spear, not just once, but twice. God, of course, is watching over David, and David is able to evade the spear on the two occasions. But do you see how far the jealousy of Saul drives him even to the point of committing murder? He wants to kill this rival of whom he is jealous. He wants to do away with him. He wants to be rid of him. A few years ago, there was a very tragic occurrence in one of the American cities. A 17-year-old college girl or high school student girl viciously killed or murdered two of her classmates who had tried to befriend her. They tried to befriend her. They weren't being nasty to her. But apparently she was jealous of their popularity with the boys, and with one boy in particular. And so jealous did she become, so much did jealousy get a hold in her heart. It drove her to the point of viciously and brutally murdering them both. That may be an extreme case, but it's not exceptional. There was a research study carried out again in America of what were called 200 sane murderers, just be as opposed to insane murderers. 200 sane murderers. 46 of them, the study identified, had been motivated by some form of jealousy. 46 out of 200, nearly a quarter of them, motivated by some form of jealousy to take another person's life. So we see here the effect of jealousy. It can drive people even to the point of murder. That's what it did to Saul. So we've seen the love of Jonathan and the jealousy of Saul. I just want to draw the message to close with two main lessons. Two main lessons arising from this. Just as David encountered jealousy, you can be sure that you will encounter jealousy in this world. It is so ingrained in our human natures, isn't it? You could encounter jealousy even in your own family and in your own home. Families have been destroyed by jealousy. There's a well-known book that's popular with girls especially, a classic in fact, called Little Women. Louisa May Alcott is the author. You may have read it. In that account, which has a family, it's a family full of girls, Amy, the youngest sister, is very jealous because two of her older sisters are allowed to go to the theatre and she isn't allowed to go. And she gets so upset with this and into such a rage of jealousy at her sister Amy that she takes Joe's manuscript that Joe has spent such a long time writing and she throws it in the fire out of jealousy. Jealousy in the family. You see that in the Bible, don't you? Famous instance of it. The sons of Jacob, the brothers of Joseph, were told in the Bible they were jealous of their brother Joseph because of his dreams, because of the favor with which he was treated by his father. And what harm their jealousy did. They wanted to kill him as well, didn't they? They end up selling him into slavery. Something that can happen even in what should be the harmonious bond of family life. Jealousy can cause disharmony and trouble. How about in the school? In the school? In the college? If you happen to be doing well, if you happen to have a lot of friends and you happen to be very popular, don't be surprised if somebody gets jealous of you and tries to take it out on you. Don't be surprised at all. How about in the workplace? If it appears even to your colleagues that you might be in line for promotion, a step up, don't be surprised if you encounter jealousy from some of those around you. Rather than rejoicing in your success, they will see you as a rival and they'll be out to do you some harm in some way or another. And even in the church, could that be? Could jealousy find room in the church? Could jealousy be operating in our midst? It could. It could. It got into the church in Corinth. Let me read you again here. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 20. Paul is going to make another visit to Corinth. And here's what he fears. I fear that there may be quarreling, jealousy, outbursts of anger, factions, slander, gossip, arrogance and disorder. But he fears, I fear that when I come to visit you, I'm going to find jealousy amongst you. In our pastoral visitation and these days, we're looking at the important subject of using our gifts in the service of the Lord. That's a great thing that in the congregation, in the church, people have different gifts. But so twisted can you and I be That rather than rejoicing in the variety of gifts, rather than rejoicing that he or she, you know, she's a great gift, could even be tempted, couldn't we, to be jealous of them, begin to dislike them, begin to see them not as our brother or our sister in the Lord, but even as a rival. It's possible. These things are possible. Just as David encountered jealousy, don't be surprised if you encounter jealousy and hardship in some form or another because of jealousy from those around about you. And then related to this, the lesson related to this is simply this: how much you and I need to be on our guard lest jealousy gets a hold on us. It happened to the Christians in Corinth. There was jealousy there. Could happen here too. What should we do in relation to jealousy? How can we remedy it? How can we be on our guard against it? How can we deal with it? For sure, there's no doubt about it, for sure, at times, jealous thoughts are going to arise in your heart and mine. If we're honest with ourselves, we put our hands up and say, yes, I have been guilty many times of thinking jealous thoughts. Well, we need to deal with them, don't we? We mustn't allow them to get a hold. Here are a few things that maybe have helped to us, to help to you, if you're tempted, if you've been tempted by jealousy. First of all, remember how destructive jealousy can be to yourself. It was destructive to Saul. He was driven mad. Turned him almost into a murderer. He wasn't intent on murder. It tormented him. Every time he saw David, he had his eye on him. He could only see him as a rival. William Penn, I think the associated with Pennsylvania, once put it this way: the jealous are troublesome to others, but a torment to themselves. If you allow jealousy to get a grip on yourself, you'll be tormenting yourself. There was a poem written, actually, won a prize at a school prize giving. I don't think it's a great poem, but it does, I think, capture how jealousy can be tormenting. Here's a written by a young woman in the school, in the college. She wrote of a friend: I saw your book and I was jealous. I was jealous of your abilities at gift giving when you gave me a gift. I was jealous of your sunglasses. I was jealous of your kindness when you said it was okay to be jealous. I was jealous almost all day long. I like particularly that line, is pretty striking. I was jealous of your kindness, even when you said it was okay to be jealous. That's how powerful it can be, and what a torment it can bring. If you allow jealousy into your life, it'll torment you. Secondly, of course, realize how dishonoring to God it is. Realize how dishonoring to God jealousy is. For as Christians, we're called to love one another. Is jealousy consistent with loving one another? It's really the opposite in many ways. It's not consistent. If you and I are showing signs of jealousy toward one another, we're contradicting what we ought to be in the Lord. Remember, it's dishonoring to the Lord whom you profess to love. In fact, if your life is dominated by jealousy, it could be a sign that you're not a Christian at all. And you need a new heart that is able to love and appreciate others. Able to look upon them with kindly and sympathetic eyes rather than with a jealous eye. Remember that jealousy is utterly dishonoring to God. Thirdly, nip it in the bud. If you have a jealous thought, and we do, we'll all have jealous thoughts arise in our minds, don't allow them to grow. Don't allow them to grow and develop. It's a bit like the weed. Pull it out right away. Don't allow it to spread or to grow or to develop. Ask the Lord. Confess it to the Lord and ask the Lord to help you not to be setting a jealous eye
upon your brother or your sister or your neighbor or someone in your family. Ask the Lord to help you to look at them with the eyes of love and understanding and appreciation instead. And one final thing. Perhaps one of the best remedies for jealousy is this. Let's keep in focus. Let's keep our eyes on promoting the glory of God. Promoting the glory of God. Rather than wanting to focus on our own promotion, our own achievements, our own popularity, all of that. It's not easy. But as Christians, that's what we're told to do. We're to keep our eyes on the glory of God. We want to glorify Him in all we do. You see, if you're jealous, then you're really focusing on yourself, aren't you? Your own standing, your own popularity. You're not focusing on God. May God help us to focus upon Him in our lives. Want to promote His glory. And then we'll not be inclined to fix jealous eyes on our brothers and sisters who maybe are more popular, more successful than we are. Two things then in this passage before us. The love of Jonathan for David. Appreciate and value the bond of male friendship. It's a blessing from God where it exists. Appreciate it and value it. It was a great value to David in his life. And secondly, beware of the ugly green-eyed monster of jealousy, which will only torment you, which will dishonor God, which can get such a hold that it could do great harm to you in your life, whereas you should be focusing on bringing glory to the God who is so worthy of all that glory. Amen.